A pastor to pastors by the name of Mark Dance wrote a Lifeway article detailing the four most frequent questions pastors ask about their kids, one of which being, how can I keep my kids from hating the church? We're going to dive into that question and his three others in today's episode of The Preacher's Kids. Hey, welcome back to the Preacher's Kid podcast. I'm John Groves, and I'm here with my co-host, Eli Blevins. What's up, Eli? How you doing?
What's up, John? How are you?
You know what? I'm just living the dream. What is life like in Wilmington, North Carolina?
So right now it's about 55 degrees. Fun fact, when I was in second grade, I watched the Weather Channel as the only channel I could really, not only that I could watch, the only one I really wanted to watch. So me being able to share about the weather right now is a dream of mine. So we got a nice little crisp 55 degrees. We have still some orange leaves on the tree, and it is beautiful outside. I am not a cold weather fan, but I can do 55 degrees. And it's really weird because we're such a vacation town. So we'll see like a spike in our people from like end of March until like September. So like right now it's like the real ones are here, you know, like the real locals are here. Like, we don't have all the tourists here, and so, like, you can make it to your house in under 15. Wilmington here is good. How about you? What's it like over there?
You know what? I am in San Antonio, Texas, and yesterday it was a balmy 75 degrees, and I went outside in shorts and mowed the grass on in December. That was crazy.
Nice. Now, is it mow the grass or mow the lawn or cut the grass? Like, I heard someone say, what do you mean by mowing? And I was like, what do you mean by where you take the lawnmower and go? And they're like, oh, we call it cutting the grass where I'm from. And I was like, weird.
No, they were probably from like way up north or something like that.
I know, where they call soda pop and stuff like that.
That's just weird. It's soda. It's not pop. Okay.
And if it's not a soda, it's just like a Coke. Coke is Sprite. Coke is, you know, everything. But exactly. Sweet tea, though. I mean, like, now, if you don't know about sweet tea. God, in the words of a Southerner, God bless.
God bless your heart. And listen, to all of our friends listening, it is not acceptable to offer unsweet tea and then say that there is sugar on the table. Sugar does not dissolve in cold. I'm really passionate about that. I'm sorry to get so worked up about it. No.
Thanksgiving, I had a tragedy happen in our family, and it was someone accidentally brought three unsweet teas. There was no sweet tea there. And I was actually in South Carolina for this. And so, you know, I had to take a moment. And the thing is, I did not drink sweet tea from the first day of November. And I was going to break that, like, it wasn't really a fast, but, you know, whatever it is, I was going to break my sweet tea addiction on Thanksgiving. I get there and there's unsweet tea. It was like the Lord was telling me, you're not done yet.
Wow.
Your time's not up. So, you know, sometimes you just got to follow the spirit on that one.
You know what? You're so spiritual. I want to be like you when I grow up.
Yeah. Fasting, you know, Jesus says, go to the well. He's the well. You know, like, he'll give you the everlasting water. You'll never run dry with him. I was running dry on sweet tea. So
I read God's word was sweeter than the honeycomb, which means God is not a fan of unsweet tea.
Nope. The Lord's a good God. Why would he want us to have that's man-made. Sweet tea is from God. Unsweet tea is man-made. You know, it's like one of those things. So
I don't need any of that in my life. Come on. We are not only speaking to preacher's kids, we're speaking to parents of preacher's kids, but as two PKs who have been in ministry basically our entire lives and now serve in ministry of our own free will, which takes a lot of people by, we have some perspective and some things that we want to share. And we think this is going to be a help to anybody and everybody who's listening. But today, our episode specifically is kind of from a kid's perspective back to their ministry leader parents. Lifeway did a survey, and they came up with the top four questions that ministry parents, preachers, pastors, evangelists, missionaries were asking about their kids. And so we thought, who better to answer these questions than actual preachers' kids? And so, Eli, I want to dive into it because the first one, I mean, it's a deep question. Parents are asking, should I protect my kids from church conflict? Because pastors wow. deal with a lot of church conflict. Should they shield their kids from it, or should they shove them right into it? Is there a
happy? Is there such thing as an unhappy medium? I think. Okay, so now that I'm 26 years old and I'm in ministry, and I am still very young and in ministry, like, but my parents didn't necessarily shield me from conflict. They didn't gossip about it, like, by any means. That's not what I'm trying to say. But they did let me in on, you know, like, if they were struggling with something, like, hey, like, this is hard, this is kind of what happened, this is kind of, like, went down, and they did it all without being, like, gossipy about it. Now, at 26 years old, I'm working in ministry. I think knowing those ahead of time and still being, like, I still want to do that, and I still want to pursue the local church, I think for me now I have a greater appreciation that they did do that, yes. because now I'm, like, nothing really surprises me anymore, and it's not that I, like, would lose trust with people at all. I will trust you until you, you know, stab me in my back. And even then I'll have to, like, prove that you stabbed me in my back to, like, make me lose your trust. But I think because they would let me in, not in the deep way, but they would just be like, hey, you know, like, this kind of stinks, you know, it is what it is. I think it allowed me from a young age to start kind of, I don't know, understanding some of the inside yes. stuff as well. They did it so well, though, to where it was almost like it wasn't even – because we just talk church stuff a lot, like, and I think they talked about so much of the good stuff, though, as well. So I didn't just hear from the perspective of, oh, this stunk. Like, I heard from perspective of, like, we celebrate first, and then, like, you know, we talk about what's going on. And it's kind of like the sandwich. Have you ever had, like, you have, like, compliment or something good, some kind of maybe a little negative, and then, like, on the bottom half of the sandwich is, like, another compliment or something good? Like, that's kind of what my, like, life looked like in a nutshell. We celebrate. Hoorah, this was, you know, these kind of people kind of rubbed us wrong, like, there's, you know, something like that, but oh my gosh, like, whatever this person is, or, you know, outshines it all, and so I kind of had that experience, so it's a happy medium for sure. It definitely wasn't ever, like, super in-depth, but it definitely also wasn't, you know, like, they weren't shielding me. So, yeah, what about you? How did your parents do with you on that?
I think that you hit the nail on the head when you said it doesn't have to be super in-depth, but enough for your kids to have a perspective. Because if you are in ministry or you've been to church more than one time, you know that one of the biggest complaints in the church world is gossip. People do it. People gossip. And so your kid is going to either hear your perspective or someone else's, but they're not going to be kept in the dark because people talk. And so it's better from a PK's perspective. You grew up in a really positive environment. I kind of grew up in the opposite, where my family would do their best to, like, pretend like none of these things existed and they didn't, you know, talk about those types of things. But I always knew what was going on, one, because they would talk about those things after I went to bed, but I was not asleep. I heard everything they said.
And you're like, your ears stuck up to the wall, like, oh,
exactly. But, like, all the deacon's kids, trustees' kids, I mean, the kids who rode the bus to church, they all were telling me what their parents were saying about my family or that situation when they went home. So I was hearing about it anyway, and it would have been better to have heard a positive approach, you know, or at least just the cold, hard truth from my parents. But I do think that it's important for pastors to remember that your kids are not your associate pastors.
Right.
They are not pawns in a game to get information or to disseminate information, but they are strategic leaders in your ministry. So please don't use them, but and don't abuse that position, but do understand that they need to know what's going on, especially if you want to keep them in your family ministry for very long. So I agree with you, man. Right. It's got to be a happy medium somewhere in the middle.
For sure. And I think so often I think that we as kids, cuz I think we see even like pop culture, you know, I think Disney and all these shows, they make the kids seem like their lives are separate than like parents. And the parents, there's always a struggle. If you watch any Disney show or anything like that, it's always the parents are so out of touch with the kids and the kids are so out of touch with the parents. I think by them doing that, it kind of bridged that gap. So when you're sitting there now, when you're watching Disney Plus or whatever you're watching, and you see these, you know, family sitcoms, it wasn't really my reality because I never really saw like, oh, this is happening, or they were, you know, staying up late and, you know, doing this. I was like, that I was just let in on the world, and I wasn't let in on 10 out of 10. Like I wasn't let out, you know, like in the deepest, darkest things, but I was still like, they made me feel like I was heard and I heard them as well. And so it was really healthy. And so I think for so many of my other friends who had parents and other, you know, whatever their work is, I could feel like they would even bring like their parents' stress to school sometimes.
Absolutely.
Like, especially with like finances or something like that. But I heard like so many positive things about what my, you know, mom and dad's job was that I was like, I felt like I had so much confidence in life because I heard them talk about confidence and so many good things about their job. And it does trickle down. I mean, like I said, you are the kid's biggest role model. So like you do get to, I mean, whether you like it or not. And so you do have a great voice. And so church conflict, it happens every single day. You know, now I'm in a church and I see, you know, way more than I, you know, would have even thought. But at the same time though, it's like, I know that we're doing this for, like, for the Lord. We're doing this to reach a city, and you know, like if there's conflict, like that's okay, but our vision is still the same, and that's to show people there's more to life in Christ, and that's our church vision. But I just know if we keep that in mind, like you'll be good, and make sure your kids know that as well. Like they have to be reminded of that.
Absolutely. And I know that we're going to talk a little bit later in the episode about how in ministry you don't have the luxury of leaving your job at the office, at least not in the sense that an accountant or a chef or somebody else would. It is different in ministry, but it is important to go home and be a parent and not go home and be a pastor, which kind of leads us into the next big question that Lifeway uncovered from their polling of pastors. A big one was pastors were asking, how should I shepherd my kids at home? You know who they are when they walk off the platform. You know what they're like in bad traffic. You know what they're like at family Thanksgiving. And so pastors are trying to figure out, I don't want to be pastor to my kids, but I also do need to pastor my kids. How do I do both? And I think your parents did a great job. Tell us about how they made.
Gosh, I've never really thought about it until then. I just kind of, it's weird. You ever had, it's like you just live it. Like you don't know how to explain it. You've just lived it. Yeah. And so they just did such a good, just such a great of keeping always the main thing. And to them, it was like they want as much fun life as possible. So if anything as a family, which we always had family stuff going on, like we were just always doing stuff, it was a party. It was a competition. It was a party. And we're bringing other people along for the ride. And so I think I was just like, maybe a little bit, I was a little skewed in the way I was growing up, because I just thought church is always just one big party. So kind of going back to the other question of conflict, like I just always thought everything was good. Everything in church was probably, you know, really good with some negative stuff thrown, with some like negative stuff like thrown in there, like I knew about for sure. But then like I get to these things like everyone loves my parents. Like, yeah, this is how it is. And then you'd hear something like a month later, And like I would take offense for them. So like if I heard something like you would were saying, like you heard people talking about it, and like I would take offense to that. Like I'd be like, no, those are my daddy's bigger than your daddy, like kind of like you know, I'd kind of puff my shoulders up and like get ready to go at them. And but no, they made sure family was number one and number two and number three, apart from God. Someone out there is getting out there like, you know, their theology, like, ah, Jesus should be number one, you know, I saw them that I carry today. I saw them value each other first, God first, then each other, made sure their marriage was good, and then us as well. And for me, like being able to see mom and dad just love each other and have so much fun in life and never yelling at each other, for a kid growing up in that, like I feel like I grew up in like Disney World sometimes with that. Like it was just awesome. But they made sure that me and my sister Bailey, that we were just such high priorities. There was a game, they were going to either coach it or they were going to be there. And so they shepherd us. It's a little weird, admittedly, like sharing your parents with, you know, 500 other people. That part is weird, and it's still a little weird. You know, it's like sometimes I'm not Eli. Sometimes I'm still Pastor Tim's son.
Right.
And which is like, fine. I am that. I am more than that. But I think it was a little weird just like sharing your parents with stuff, and you know, you're going to restaurants and they're getting, I say recognized, but that sounds so like celebritized, but like,
right,
you know, you'd see people you know around, and you know, like that was a little weird, but we were just such a priority that I was just like, this is normal, this is fun. It was weird, but it was what it was. So yeah, what about you from your end? I don't know if I answered the question right, but they kept us number one. Like they just kept,
yeah,
my dad kept the family number one. So,
well, you pointed out something interesting. You talked about the restaurant experience. So
yeah,
what the first thing, and now that we're in ministry, we do it too. But the first thing that our dads would do when they walked into a restaurant is do a quick look around to see if any of the church people were there.
Undoubtedly.
You don't get to just pretend like those people aren't there and go sit down and go about your day. You're expected to go and make a connection, you know, like, yep, hey, it's good to see you. You're expected to know their name or at least remember seeing them at church or not seeing them at church. You know, there's all kinds of things, yep, you're supposed to remember. So when our families walked into a public place, we did the scan anticipating that we were going to see someone that we knew and we were going to be happy about it, regardless of who they were.
Yep.
I would say that shepherding your kids at home looks a lot like treating your kids like you treat going into a public place. When you walk through the, yep, door and your preacher's kid who has been sharing you with, you know, after hours counseling, after hours phone calls, you know, weird,
yep,
appointments and hospital visits. When you walk through the door, look for your kids in the living room and in their bedroom with the same anticipation and joy that you look for a congregant in the local, yep, restaurant. And your kids will feed off of that energy because Pastor, mm-hmm, Robbie Gallaty, who pastors Long Hollow in Hendersonville, Tennessee, he is big on discipleship. And he always says, hey, pastor, your family is your most important discipleship group. And, yep, that is so true. And you got to see from a really positive perspective how that your parents involved you in things and they did life with their family and made that a priority over other people. When your family is healthy, then your church family can also be healthy. But if you're losing in one, you're losing in the other, undoubtedly. And at the end of the day, your family is your most important discipleship group. So to the, yeah, pastor who's wondering, like, how do I pastor my kids? Well, number one, recognize that you're dad first or mom first and pastor second, but disciple them. Be in the word and make prayer something that you do fervently around the dinner table or the living room or the bedroom and not just something you do from the platform. Right. And then also realize that every human being is looking for a confidant, right? And, yeah, for most people, that's their pastor. But for your kid, that might be difficult for them to connect with you in that way. Especially, yeah, if you're hearing this and you're going, I've got some things I need to correct. I haven't been doing this right for very long. So, mm-hmm, share other pastors on staff or other pastor friends that you know, or just godly, wise people in your church that you trust, share them with your kids. And, yeah, don't be intimidated when your kid has a youth pastor that they really rely on. Because if you trust, yeah, them, the most important thing is seeing your kid raised up and discipled in the best way possible.
You hit the nail on the head there. I think the most simplest thing, if you're a parent and you're listening to this, or you're going to be a parent, or involve them is the first thing. Just involve them in everything that's going on. You know, don't shield them. You know, you can, like I said, explain things on the surface level, but involve them, man. Make them feel like they are just as much a part of, you know, building the church as you are. I remember missing a practice once because I was going door to door handing out invites to our first ever church service.
Amazing.
When I was like 9 years old. And I remember that moment distinctly. And I think then in the moment, I was probably just like, whatever, like, this stinks. I want to go to soccer practice. But what it did is it allowed them to have, you know, it was a very, you know, I guess building block for me working in the church or doing ministry. Like that was my kind of first thing. Cause, you know, I think he also brought me like on some of those trips because they're like, we're not going to, you know, cuss out a guy who's bringing his kid along with him. Like, no, we're not going to your stupid church. Kind of thing.
Yes.
So I think I was like an easy buffer. You know, it's like when you're like walking a dog, like everyone wants to come like pet the dog. I think I was like kind of like the mascot kind of thing.
Come on.
But I was just involved. Like they just let me do stuff. And, you know, and sometimes I didn't even know it was for my own good. And now 14, 15 years later, I'm like, that was for my good. Like, you know, my parents knew a thing or two about a thing or two. But I also had, you know, amazing pastors in my life. I had amazing people who I could look up to. Admittedly, probably at times, not all times. It was probably sometimes hard though for me to like go to them, like if I was struggling with stuff, or if like I had any questions or something like that, just because I think one of them, I just thought I didn't want to be a burden to them. Like, cause I just hear them, oh, we're in another meeting. We got this going on. And so like, I would go to a youth pastor, or I'd go to, you know, someone else who I trusted and that was around, and which is fine. Like, but by the way, if you're in a church setting right now, like your youth pastor, like make sure that you have the like right one in place.
Yes.
Because that's important, because your kids will look up to them. And so I was able to look up to mine though, and just ask questions and hang around them, and naturally kind of conversation flows. And so that part was really good. But I guess a negative was like, I didn't always feel like not from their end, but from my end, I didn't want to be like a burden to them. And so like, I would kind of shield probably more than I should have. And not that I was like doing anything bad, but you know, just like had a hard day kind of thing. And so, yeah, I think I could have done a better job looking on the other side, like going to them as well to be a confidant on some things. But honestly, like that's just such a very small fraction of the time anyway. So,
right.
Yeah.
To the preacher's kids that are listening, I don't know, you're probably in one of two scenarios. One, your parents have done this really well and you're like Eli and you don't want to be a burden. Or two, your pastor parents haven't handled this the best and you don't want to talk to them. Both groups of kids are in a cycle that somebody has to break. And so as the preacher's kid, break the cycle. Maybe the reason why your parents are bugging you with questions and maybe even passive aggressive things all the time is because they want to know information. They want to be trusted, whether they, you know, deserve to be or not from your perspective. And for those that aren't watching the video, that was a big air quotes in deserve.
Yeah.
For those that are like, oh, I don't want to be a burden, let me also speak from the parent side and say, your parents want to hear from you. And you don't have to give them every detail that maybe you're talking to a youth pastor or a discipler about, but just trusting them with bits and pieces, little things here and there that are random, that are unrequested from their side, is going to cause them to trust you so much more. And it's going to cause you to respect and learn from and fall in love with them so much more as well.
Amen. I think that you can be in one of two camps, but you can also come in and out of both those camps at the same time too. Just like Absolutely. With rhythms of life or seasons of life. By the way, I think I hear the word seasons of life only in the Christian context. Maybe I'm wrong, but maybe in your just season in of life, season like it just looks different. And so I would encourage you guys, don't feel like you have lost your parents to work or to church because of that. Parents don't make your kids have a reason to feel that way either. You know, Boom. It's like, I mean, just don't. And if you're listening to this and you are not a pastor's kid, or you are not, you know, a pastor, whatever it is in your life that you're in, maybe you just are a Christian, and you are either a, you know, a kid, or, you know, I say kid, or a parent, just don't understand seasons are seasons, but don't let seasons be a lifetime of something. Yes. So like, yeah, there can be hard times, but like, it doesn't have to be hard always. You know, like the Warriors, the basketball team, they had 4 years of like a dynasty and now they are terrible. Like, because that's how seasons go. Like,
you do, yep.
Like some are really good and now some like some aren't. And so, I mean, I don't know. I don't want to get too preachy about it, but it's just important not to bring, and I think you touched on all of it, it's important not to bring church work home, but it's important to bring the spirit of the church home. And so you don't have to make your kids feel like a burden for doing that. No, you get to be a part of this. Like, you are a blessing to us and we want to know about your life. And then again, like, teens are teens, so like I feel like they're gonna, you know, not want to share their parents anyways. But like, you just have a unique opportunity to do so. And yeah, you can fall in one, two camps, or even a hybrid camp there. And maybe you're not even a Christian. You're just listening to this. Like, seasons are seasons. Just don't let them be, you know, everything. So
absolutely,
yeah.
I think it's important for every pastor to know that if you will nail this at home, like if you learn how to lead your family well, you can translate all of those principles back into the church world. If your home is a fun, exciting, organized, happy, whatever type of a place, your church will be that too. But if your home is messed up, like, pastors are wondering, why don't my people talk to me? Why don't they trust me? I'm like, news alert, your kids don't either, probably. You know, right. If you'll nail it at home, you'll be able to take it to church, which is why the number three question a lot of pastors are asking, according to Lifeway, how often should we make our kids go to church? And that's a deep one. I think we may be on the same wavelength with this question, but I want to toss it to you because you shared your basketball practice story. How often should a pastor make their kids go to church?
That's a tricky question because I was always in church.
Yep.
I guess I was made to go to church, but also all my friends were in church. So it was like I really wanted to go to church, but then there were times where I was forced to go to church, and I think I had a worse attitude about it, and then it showed up at church that I was upset at something or my parents. And so, cause I have a tendency, I can go negative, like real quick, and I can kind of like do that, especially as a kid. And so, you know, I could make that like really hard for them. So like, don't force your kids to go to church. Invite them along though,
yes,
to do so. But I just don't say, just don't maybe force them, but like, it's important to know that church is what we do. My parents had a saying, and every time I'd leave the house, they would say this, and I promise you this will tie into it, but they would look at me and they would say, you know who you are a Blevins. And yes. I knew that because I was a Blevins, I was held to a different standard. So we did go to church. We were there when the doors were opened, partly because we had keys to it, but like, we were there for that stuff. And, but I knew from the time I could, you know, remember hearing, I was a Blevins and I was, you know, different, like, and not in an arrogant way, not in like a self-righteous, like, well, we're better, but no, like, this is who we are. This is what we do. Other kids may have this, but also they don't, their dad's work. You don't have friends that your friends don't have friends at your dad's work and you do. So like, you have a one up there on them for that. And so I kind of had, it was unique, but I was there a lot. I was there a lot, yes. And probably like more than I should have, but like there were times where I was probably forced to be there. And, you know, at the same time though, kids, like, if you can't drive, you don't really get a decision. Like,
come on.
Like, you just do it. Are you paying the bills? No, then you should probably listen to your parents. So
you just hit on so many things that I resonated with. Before we got out of the car, our question or statement was, don't forget who you are. And so same, because, and to the preacher's kids, I don't want you to let this go to your head. I just want you to consider the weight of who you are. You are a member of the first family, like the royal family, the president's family, whatever, as far as your church is concerned, you're a member of the first family. And what you do actually biblically has a consequence in your parents' ministry. So their success kind of rises and falls on you as well.
Yeah.
That's important. You know, don't take that for granted, but understand that people are looking at you and you have an important job as a preacher's kid. So parents, don't forget that your kids are an important part of your ministry. So should I make them go? Well, for the preacher's kid that's listening that thinks that they have it bad, let me share like a 60-second version of my testimony. I grew up independent, fundamental, Bible-believing, King James only, bless God, better than you Baptist, okay? We were all those things and more. Yes.
Yeah.
And I'm not that anymore, which you can probably tell, but I was there every time the doors were open. So Sunday morning, I was there And I actually became the music leader at our church when I was 12 years old, because a church split, piano player leaves the church. It became my job. Yeah.
Next
so,
man up.
Yes. So Sunday mornings, every Sunday morning, I was at church by like 8 a.m. To help set up the church building to make sure everything was in order. And then
I got to sleep in. I'm 6 a.m. man.
Dude, well, y'all have those multiple services and everything. You know, we just had one big building, you know. So be there by 8, set everything up, 10 o'clock Sunday school, 11 o'clock church, then lunch with some church people, and then back for choir practice at 5 o'clock, evening service at 6. And then Tuesday night was Bible Institute. Wednesday night was choir practice and then an evening service. And then Thursday night was hospital visitations. And then Friday night was Reformers Unanimous program at the church. Saturday morning, 10 a.m. men's prayer. Saturday afternoon, door-to-door visitation. And we did that every single week. If church was on Christmas, we were there, you know, like, we're there for all the things.
What kind of gifts? There's no better gift than the birth of Jesus. So like, you don't need to open up gifts. Jesus gave his son to us. Like, that's a gift.
The least we could do is give him an hour on Sunday morning and our tithes. Don't forget your tithes, ladies and gentlemen. You know, that's
I'm not going there.
We won't even touch it. I was there all the time, and I had to be a part of everything, and I had to sacrifice, you know, athletic opportunity type things. I had to sacrifice, you know, like even some employment type things, because we had to be at church, and because it was made to be this obligation, it was a duty rather than a privilege. I hated it. So to the parent, I would say, if you will raise a family when they're young that loves to serve together, if you will make a family ministry, then your kids will love it and they will choose to be a part of it. But as they get older and they're able to drive and they have other opportunities, please do not make them be at every single function. And pastors, you don't need to be at every single function that the church is hosting.
If
you are the fulcrum on which everything hinges, I don't know if that was the right thing. If everything hinges on you, you're doing it wrong. Yeah. And how are you
empowering if you're at everything?
Exactly. You're not. Yeah. And your kids are going to feel that way. Your staff is going to feel that way. So I agree. When they're little kids, teach them the importance of being involved and involve them. You know, invite them along the journey. Who knows? They may choose, like Eli and I, to be in ministry when they grow up. But if you make it an obligation and a negative duty and you hold it over their heads and they have to sacrifice every semblance of childhood because of your agenda, they're going to hate ministry. They're going to hate you. And they're going to be one of the overwhelming statistic of PKs that turn to addiction, atheism, homosexuality, and the like as a band-aid for the deep spiritual and family wounds that they have that you helped inflict. I know that was hard.
There's probably not a perfect answer. I think there's just a hybrid of answers to this. And for kids, though, like, and by the way, when we say kids, we're speaking at it and like, you're not the parent in this situation. Like, whether you're 20 years old or not, like, that's just... Right. That's what we're talking about. But you have a choice, so you have an attitude. Attitude's a choice. Like, how is your spirit, like, going to be towards this? Like, are you going to be joyful or are you going to be bitter? Like, that's kind of your two choices that you have. And, you know, maybe your family situation looks even different than mine or John's does. Or I think you're just having an attitude, though, of doing it. And when you get a car, like, when you are 16, or for those of you who are, you know, driving and whatnot, like, you don't have to go to every, don't feel like you have to go to everything either. Like, live a life, have a good life. I'm obviously responsibly not being an idiot, but like, you don't feel like you have to. And I think because I didn't feel that way, I wanted to keep coming back. Like, I wanted to come. You know, like, whenever your parents say, like, you can't do it, you want to do it even more.
Right.
Like, I remember one time I remember one time it was a Wednesday night service that we had. Shout out to the Wednesday night services.
Come on.
Those are still the same places. And they were like, don't come. You need to just stay home and rest. And I was like, no, I'm not going to stay home. I'm going to come do this. Like, right. You can't tell me no to this. So it was almost like I was rebelling. And like, I think it was kind of like their psychological way of doing it, like, because they're geniuses. But I just remember one time it's like, you know, I had a car. Like, you know, you're just like, they're like, just stay home. You don't need to come to it. And I was like, no, you bet. I'm going to come to this. Like, and this is what's going to happen. I'm going to come and it's going to be fun. And so, Doc, you won't like it. It's not even going to be fun. I'm like, oh, I'm still coming. You just help.
I'm going to make it fun.
I think there, yeah. So I think there's some times of that too. And have fun with it. My gosh, don't take everything so seriously. Like, please don't take church more seriously than you take your family and absolutely. Your friends. Like, just, and I think when we realize it, the church, the institution of the church, is meant to reach a city. Like, your kids are in that city, your brothers and sisters are in that city. Like, everyone's included in that circle. So,
yes.
I mean, you can't reach a city if you can't reach family. I mean,
come on.
Just, I mean, is what it is. But yeah, I keep going these like little tangents. I'm passionate about it, and I'm passionate about family dynamics and church, how that plays out. And because I came from an overly positive one, it made it kind of, it's probably very different than other people's. So don't think that my story has to be your story either. But I think if everyone has a choice though, and you can choose to make that choice on, you know, your attitude towards church. So
absolutely. Yeah. So the last question, and I think we could just both give a bullet point answer because we've covered so much ground that relates to this. So what would your bullet point answer be to the final Lifeway question? How can I keep my kids from hating the church?
Bullet point answer, fun. Have fun. Don't be such a suit and tie kind of person that you can't have fun. Don't make your kids, you know, do things. I don't know. Just have fun with it. Just please have fun. I had so much fun. I'm still having fun. I hope my kids have fun because, sorry, they're going to be pastor's kids too. So hopefully they get to hear this one day and you know. This is kind of like my diary to my kids.
Yes. So. Shout out to the future of Blevins and Groves kids. You've got a lot coming your way.
I cannot wait for the future quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys. He's going to be listening to this, young Eli Blevins Jr.
Jason Garrett will still be the coach, and he'll still be clapping like he's in a church choir.
We're done with this conversation.
Oh, come on. You know, and I agree with your bullet point answer 100%. I believe that the greatest, easiest way to keep your kids from hating the church, and I'm not just talking about the place, I'm talking about the people. The best way to keep them from hating the concept of church is to have fun, to take everyday things that might seem monotonous and make them enjoyable and involve them, disciple them,
yep.
and choose to make it a good time. Which just right into our closing segment, Eli and I were talking about a way that we wanted to close every episode. And for the duration, we want to talk about, you might be a preacher's kid if, like you've heard Jeff Foxworthy, you might be a redneck if, and there are so many things that only preacher's kids understand. And Eli had a great one this week. Share that with us.
You might be a preacher's kid if you got to drink all the communion afterwards, because it was grape juice. And yeah, we had competitions in our family who could drink the most leftover grape juice communions and eat the bread as well.
Yes.
So yeah, that was fun.
So my favorite part of communion services was those ushers would tote all of those trays with the communion cups up to the church kitchen. My grandpa and my dad and I would go in there, and my grandpa was a big John Wayne movie fan, like old Westerns and stuff like that.
Oh, nice.
He would pretend like those things were shot glasses. I know we didn't even believe in alcohol, but we would pretend like they were shot glasses and compete to see who could throw back the most. And we had a lady in one of our churches that made the communion bread from scratch. And
oh, boots.
It was so good. And so, like, I would always ask her to make me, like, a couple extra plates of it, and I would just snack on it. Like, communion times were the best. Like, throwing back the shot glasses.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I spilled some grape juice once, and you know, that was fun. You had to clean up the purple stain. By the way, who thought giving kids like grape juice and thinking they're not going to spill it?
Come on.
Christmas services with like the candles, like I'm terrified of kids and candles. Like, yeah, that's not a good, someone's going to get burned. There's going to be grape juice spilled. But I remember like we had communion on Sunday mornings and I was just like, I'm not going to be hungry during service because I get communion. Like this is going, I'm going to eat all the leftover bread and it's going to be awesome. So
yeah, I don't know if any other PKs out there have the perspective that we do, but because we're PKs, we borderline on perfectionist. And hey, pastors out there, and your kids will agree, do not have the ushers or whatever collect the empty little plastic cups till the service is over, because we're trying to pray and all we hear is tink, 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 tink.
Yep.
Like, just stop it. It can wait. We will go pick them up after the service if you will just leave it alone.
Yes.
Man, and I don't know where that came from. That was a lot of passion about those communion cups, and it just... Yeah. Got me.
So you've been having a little too much real communion in there.
We didn't have too much real communion back here in the studio.
His was wine. Mine was Welch's grape juice. By the way, shout out to our sponsor, Welch's Grape Juice, today for what am I talking about?
Thank you so much, Welch's 100% grape juice and the Communion Cracker Company of 1968. We still have our original boxes. We still haven't used all those jokers. They're sitting in the church supply room.
By the way, the church communion bread that we used was made in 1968, I'm pretty sure, because it tastes like cardboard.
Yes, it was so gross. Yes. All right. Well, thank you guys for joining us on this week's episode of The Preacher's Kid. And we want to invite you to check the show notes, find us on social media, join our Facebook community. Most of all, send us in your communion story. If you have a PK communion story, send it in. Or if you have a question that you want us to talk about on The Preacher's Kid podcast, all questions will remain anonymous, so you don't have to worry about your parents finding out that you're the one who asked it, because we know how that is. Send it in to us, and Eli and I would love to talk about that here on the show. And we can't wait to see you next month right here on The Preacher's Kid.
That's right, and go Cowboys.
Thanks for joining us this month on The Preacher's Kids. We've so enjoyed having you with us. We're coming at you next month with that better audio that we promised. But in the meantime, we wanted to invite you to tweet us or Instagram us with your communion stories, your questions, or your hashtag PK problems. We'd love to talk about those on next month's episode. And find us on our Facebook group, The Preacher's Kid Network, where we keep the conversation going all month long. We'll see you next time.